for me personally, part of why I do bike advocacy was when I was in college, I, you know, left the car at home, the family car, and biked all the years of college. And as a result, left with very minimal student debt. And I saw about 30,000 more in student debt for my friends that had a car all through college.
Well, that's a good observation, huh? And another little factoid to share as we advocate for increased bicycle infrastructure in our communities. That's from Ed France. He's the executive director of the Santa Barbara Bicycle Coalition on the show today. And I'm your host, Frank Peters, and this is my show, CDM Cyclist. And of course, the CDM stands for Corona Del Mar. It's a little neighborhood in Newport Beach, California. And I interview people like Ed, share their experiences to help spread the word, spread best practices, and influence public opinion in my own community. Well, Ed, I got introduced to Ed through a common friend, and well, I love it when I get referrals. Santa Barbara, I couldn't resist reaching out to Ed because of the Santa Barbara connection, and I'll talk about that in the show. But, oh, if you haven't been to Santa Barbara, you want to put it on your bucket list. It's a beautiful community, an hour or two north of Los Angeles, many gifts, and what an opportunity for increasing bicycle use in this city. Ed's going to explain it all. Let's listen.
So I'm Ed France, and I'm the executive director of the Santa Barbara Bicycle Coalition.
Very good. Thanks for joining me on the show today, Ed. We got introduced by Jeff Carmody. How do you know Jeff?
Oh, Jeff and the whole Carmody family have been really helpful with us and longstanding members of the bike community in Santa Barbara. Most recently, we hosted a film called Single Track High, which is about kind of the renaissance in youth mountain biking. Mm-hmm. And we ran the film as a fundraiser and were able to raise the funds necessary to buy a small bike fleet and a bike trailer so that we can do more programs at local schools.
Okay, good. So, Ed, I think of Santa Barbara and it just has the potential to be anyway, like the world's most perfect bicycling community. You feel the same way, I'll bet.
Oh, absolutely. We have the right climate, the right topography. We have relatively dense community out here on the South Coast.
Oh, you do. Density. Yeah, that's great. And a grid too, kind of a grid.
We do. I mean, Santa Barbara is a very old city. And actually, you know, in pre-US history, we had our grid laid out. And as a result, you know, downtown Santa Barbara is pretty accessible, even though we do have some slight grades.
Mm-hmm. You are surrounded by mountains, though, too, though. But a lot of cyclists love that, too, right? You get something for everybody.
I mean, the good thing about the mountains, too, is that it actually creates a smaller area where the city actually is.
Oh, it prevents sprawl.
We're more compact. So I should say that we're not necessarily a dense community, but you can bike from one side of the South Coast to the other in about 45 minutes. And downtown Santa Barbara, you can bike from one side to the other in about 10 to 15.
Mm-hmm. And are you a Santa Barbara native?
I'm not. I'm actually from the South Bay of Los Angeles, and I've been out here 13 years now in Santa Barbara.
What brought you to Santa Barbara?
Oh, I had the distinct pleasure and privilege to go to UC Santa Barbara and realize that this is a place that I want to live. So I did my best to find a way to stay.
So I've got a UCSB story. I'll tell it quickly. I came to Los Angeles to go to UCLA for graduate school in computer science years ago, decades ago. And I really only made one friend. And after just one quarter, I think, he left UCLA to go back to continue his graduate work where he did his undergraduate work at UC Santa Barbara. And I was so disappointed that I lost, you know, my only friend. Well, it only took a week before he made contact and invited my wife and I to come up and stay with them for a weekend. We went up the next like 100 weekends in a row. We love Santa Barbara.
Yeah. Well, I mean, Santa Barbara actually has that as an advantage for why investing in bicycling here is so important. Because I think even though we're a small city, the city itself is under 100,000 people. Mm-hmm. I think it has a certain cachet where we could become a worldwide cycling destination. It's a place where we have, you know, people all through Europe, all through the world, really, and especially the U.S., come to Santa Barbara. It's, you know, it's a small city, but it's on the map, and that's part of our vision. And building a better bicycling city is one where people can pick up some of the latest and see that elsewhere. Unfortunately, that's not really the case right now. We're kind of behind in the great race to have great bike infrastructure.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Well, I'd like to get into that in a second, but first, I'm just thinking you've got. I heard it once said, if not today, someday, the world's most expensive real estate.
Yeah.
It's pricey.
It is. It's really all of those of us who live here really do sacrifice and struggle to live here. I mean, it's an amazing place, and the natural setting is just unmatchable. But it is a challenge. Despite that, we have kind of the full kind of income range here in Santa Barbara. We have a large community of very low income earners and some middle class and some very high income earners.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And biking is spread throughout that gamut.
Mm-hmm. So there's no like correlation between, you know, what do you call it? Economic inequity and cycling. Not yet anyway, or not that you observe, huh?
Well, it's actually, I mean, it's very interesting looking at the national data, because cycling tracks pretty equally amongst all the socioeconomic thresholds,
mm-hmm.
right? It's very egalitarian in that way. A lot of people assume that the bicycling population is a certain population. And here in Santa Barbara, we have the full gamut. I mean, it's pretty well represented between, you know, day laborers and you know, very low income service industry folks to, you know, the folks working in the small financial or tech sector that we have here.
Mm-hmm. And what are some of the primary industries in Santa Barbara? You've got a lot of hotels, so that's...
So, yeah, a lot of service industry, a lot mm-hmm. of restaurants, a lot of hotels. There are a lot of larger homes, you know, in the Montecito Hills and in the Riviera. So right. There's a lot of, you know, landscaping and basic labor work. Mm-hmm. And then we do mm-hmm. have a small tech sector. We have a small, even film production sector. We have great little samplings of industries that you'd find in LA or the Silicon Valley or the Bay Area. Just being a smaller community,
sounds
not
nice.
As intensive.
Yeah, sounds nice. Yeah. So, how about are you rated by the league as a bicycle-friendly community?
You know, we've actually kind of fallen off the map. I guess we failed to update our status. We were a silver city, and we were actually one of the first four silver cities in the nation. And unfortunately, kind of the case with Santa Barbara is we achieved a lot in the 90s, and over the last 15 years, there hasn't been really very significant change. And so when you look at other cities, Santa Barbara 15 years ago, if you took a snapshot, was one of the leading cities, and that's no longer the case, even though we have a very high mode share.
Well, that must help, though, a little bit to be able to make that argument with your elected officials that we did have this level of recognition and we want to get back there again. That's got to be motivating.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's funny how a lot of the politicians just are inherently competitive people.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. Yeah. So we got to get back to that. And you were saying mode share.
Yeah. We have about 6% mode share for both the city of Santa Barbara and also our city of Goleta, which is the next smallest city in the South Coast, which compares with Portland and with...
That's what I was going to say. That's about as high as it gets in this country, isn't it?
Well, Davis is
15%,
right? They're kind of the outlier. And actually, you know, Davis has the hidden advantage of their campus community is within their city.
Mm-hmm.
right? Whereas, at least for Santa Barbara, our campus community has about 50% bike mode share. So you step on the UCSB campus or Isla Vista, which is adjacent to it, and you kind of are in the Netherlands for a moment.
Oh, that's great.
In terms of mode share, but that's not within either of our two main cities.
Mm-hmm. So it's an island to itself, it sounds like.
Yeah.
So that's got to help, though, because I was riding a bike as a kid. You know, I had a paper route, and that's how I get around with all my pals, too. But then in college, who could afford a car?
Yeah.
And so UCSB, with that huge mode share, has got to be a big influence on those that age group. And then, just like yourself, a lot of them want to stay and remain in the community. So that's a great foundation for mode share, isn't it?
Absolutely. I mean, I think for me personally, part of why I do bike advocacy was when I was in college, I, you know, left the car at home, the family car, and biked all the years of college. And as a result, left with very minimal student debt. And I saw about 30,000 more in student debt for my friends that had a car all through college.
Wow, that's a selling point right there, isn't it?
Yeah, and especially, you know, as you're just starting your career, that's really significant, right? I mean, the cost of owning a car is a significant cost. For some people, it's the same as their rent, right? So to be able to live in a community where that's an option and not a necessity just kind of changes the game.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think a lot of us out here on the South Coast are inspired similarly.
Sure. My son just graduated in June from UC Santa Cruz.
Cool.
And that's a Silver City. And they don't let the kids, you can't, you know, get a parking permit on campus for your freshman and sophomore years. So, and then they compensate by the kids can all ride the bus for free. And they quickly find out you can get from Santa Cruz to San Francisco for like $12, which all the kids want to do. And anyway, it's just an indication of how easy it is to get around. How about that? Yeah. Is there public transportation for the students that?
There is. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I think, you know, a lot of the UC campuses have similar where they have free bus passes with whatever. Ours is the Santa Barbara MTD, and that can get people downtown. It can get people most places on the South Coast. And you're right. Something that's really fascinating is the UC Santa Barbara campus has actually grown, even though we kind of are a no growth community or very slow growth community in the South Coast. And so they're adding about 10,000 students over whatever is the span of years, maybe a decade. And of course, commensurate added staff. So there's a lot of growth happening on the campus. Well, they released the traffic counts around the UCSB campus, and they've actually been down 20% in the last 5 to 6 years, right?
That's great.
We're starting to actually get to the point where when you have such a good mode share and public transit and bike and walk share that you can even have some growth without growth in traffic and congestion.
Mm-hmm. Reminds me, Ed, of a story a guest once shared at Stanford University in the city of Palo Alto, right next door, putting pressure on Stanford traffic-wise to incentivize them to encourage, biking and walking. Do you know of that? Does the city have to put pressure on the university, or is it kind of over the hump?
Well, I think the university is actually leading pretty wisely.
Mm-hmm.
There's not a pressure, but if traffic volumes do notably increase from what the university's long-range development plan says they're going to be at, and the long-range development plan says that traffic counts are going to be either consistent or actually down despite this growth, right?
Mm-hmm.
So if they fail to achieve that, they'll have to pay significant penalties, kind of as congestion mitigation money,
right,
to the adjacent communities. But what I think is so cool about this is in the struggle for bicycling being seen as a legitimate form of transportation, we don't have a lot of great examples of bicycling and bus use and alternative modes actually being used statistically to reduce traffic and traffic congestion, right? Oftentimes, we're just not a part of that modeling and that game. And here we have the largest institution on the South Coast, and it's winning the traffic congestion game through effective bike and transit advocacy.
Well, it's a constant battle, isn't it? You never win this game, just like you were silver once. It's reminds me of what people say about separation of church and state. It's a never-ending battle.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now, brought up the subject of like city support, and what are you observing? What's it like on, you know, tell me your maybe your style of government in Santa Barbara first. City council? Or?
There's two types of cities, right? There's an incorporated city and there's a charter city. So we have one charter city where the city council has more flexibility, so to say. Mm-hmm. And there's incorporated cities, which a lot of basic ordinances defer to statewide policy. And so most of our smaller cities are incorporated, or our big city, city of Santa Barbara, is charter. I'd imagine that's the same. Your larger cities are charter through most of California.
Probably.
And actually,
yeah,
it's been a learning curve for us because how they adopt policy are different, right? So working with the city of Goleta is different than working with the city of Santa Barbara. And then separately, you know, there's a lot of important work to be done with the association of governments. Mm-hmm. So you usually either have a COG or a CAG, right? And then right now, all of our counties are going through their sustainable community strategy and their regional transportation plans, or at least ours are tied together. And they're basically releasing what they think is going to happen in terms of transportation for the next 20 to 30 years. Right? And that's how we're going to reduce greenhouse gas emissions.
That's what you were writing to me. We first made contact on Facebook, and you said you're working on long-range planning issues. That's what you're speaking of, huh?
Yeah. I mean, I guess, you know, I've been doing bike advocacy, I guess, since I was in college. So we've been doing a lot of community service programming, like our do-it-yourself bike repair shop and youth education in schools. And our policy work has been, you know, really kind of just the initial level, maybe even a little bit superficial. And what I think I'm finding is as we get deeper, we find that oftentimes bikes are kind of anecdotally mentioned. But part of the reason sometimes bike planning is like slamming your head against a wall is that it's very difficult to model bicycling. And oftentimes biking isn't even really counted. It's only anecdotally counted. So as a result, like this massive plan that's going to dictate where a lot of dollars go in terms of regional transportation investments did not really statistically look at bicycling at all.
Ouch.
Well, so they projected zero growth in bicycling over the next 20 to 30 years.
Oh, that's an oversight, isn't it? Zero
right?
growth. It's going to grow. It's going to double, wouldn't you say? It has a potential
yeah.
to double, if not
well, it,
more.
Yeah. It doubled over the last decade, so yeah. why wouldn't it at least follow a similar growth pattern,
yeah, it
right?
doubled to 6%, so you got a lot of room to go up still, yeah.
Right, so so that's part of the problem is not just getting political support, which is important for kind of key projects, but also getting institutional kind of structural change in how our Caltrans or our COGs or CAGs are looking at biking. Because mm-hmm. as a result, we're going to miss out on a lot of potential funding for bike projects.
Right. That same old story, right? You got to fight for every dollar. And that's tough.
And you know, one thing, Frank, that's been really kind of revealing is, and this isn't going to be true for more metropolitan communities, but at least for our county, as many people bike as take transit. Right. And not to trash talk on transit at all. It's a very valuable service. But it means that bicycling is as significant a mode of transportation as transit for our county.
But it's not getting the recognition.
Exactly. So, you know, we're looking at what gains we can make in transit. Meanwhile, we're not looking at what gains we can make in bicycling. And at least I can anecdotally say that I think there's a lot more elasticity in bicycling than right now there is for us in transit.
What you mean by that, let me see if I can guess, is probably like a lot of communities in my neighborhood, still lots of opportunity for building bike infrastructure, right?
Yeah, like our sure. our return on the infrastructure that we would build, I think, you know, we could easily double bicycling again.
Mm-hmm. Do you have a wish list, a short list of projects?
Yeah, what we're doing is kind of, it was, Frank, I have to give you some kudos on all the great guests that you've had on your show. I was listening to the show with Leah Shoham from the San Francisco Bike Coalition.
Isn't she amazing?
Oh, yeah, definitely one of the, you know.
What a powerhouse.
You have a series of bike rock stars on your show.
Thank you.
Well, San Francisco, I think, is the first, and actually I'm seeing a few other bike coalitions that are emulating their Connecting the City program.
Mm-hmm.
And what they did when their environmental impact report for their bike plan was held up in a legal dispute for a few years, they developed their own vision, kind of independent of their county city's vision, as a way to kind of press specific issues and kind of be proactive as opposed to responding to one project at a time. And so we're working on something similar where we actually are looking at all of the different cities in our jurisdictions, piecing together the networks, even when they go through three different cities or three different jurisdictions, and kind of putting together our own Connecting the South Coast vision that we'll be able to use, hopefully for the next 10 to 15 years, when we advocate for projects.
Well, that's ambitious. So that's multi-jurisdictional, right?
But the problem is, I mean, I was out recently adjacent to the university. We're in three different jurisdictions,
mm-hmm.
right? And they, back in the 1960s and early 70s, built some great bike infrastructure. And they built this class one network that just came to an end right at what used to be nothing and is now a big residential neighborhood where they're going to put in new dorms for UCSB and they have a big commercial center. And the bike network just stops. It just becomes nothing. And because it was three different jurisdictions, there was just kind of a complete inability to coordinate between the three.
I can picture that. I'm sure everybody listening to this show can probably picture that. Well, that sounds like a worthy project, Ed. And so as you're dealing with, say, just take one of these jurisdictions, say the city of Santa Barbara, what's it like? Here in Newport Beach for the past three now, going on 4 years, we've had some kind of a bike safety task force or bike safety committee. Is there something like that in the city of Santa Barbara?
We have the Transportation and Circulation Committee,
mm-hmm.
Which I sit on and I chaired in the past. What was really cool about Santa Barbara, again, this is kind of where we apexed in terms of being a leading in policy, was in 1998, we actually had a precursor to the Complete Streets Movement, which was one of the first circulation elements that valued biking and walking and access to transit as highly as access to vehicular traffic.
Mm-hmm.
And so what we do with that commission is we look at all transportation projects and we have to basically decide whether or not it's consistent with our circulation element to our general plan, which says that there's equal access to all of these different modes of transportation.
Right. Now, as you say that, my mind starts to wander and I'm thinking about reapplying for silver status.
Yeah, so we're doing that now, and it's mm-hmm. it's tricky from an advocacy perspective. You almost want to be like I actually am even reviewing the application because the league sends it to, you know, local folks to independently review. And from an advocacy perspective, it's mixed. On one hand, you want your community to have, you know, the best kind of accolades, but on the other hand, you don't want them to get anything too easily, right?
Exactly.
Because there's definitely complacency.
Sure. And I know what you mean. There are times maybe we see an award or a level of recognition get handed down and it seems too easy. You've probably seen that at other communities nearby. Yeah. So that is a balancing act to keep the pressure on and at the same time give the elected officials. Somebody once told me, there's nothing like having your elected officials at the podium cutting the ribbon, you know, on a new piece of infrastructure or announcing the bicycle-friendly community. That all builds momentum.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think what we'd really love to do right now is apply for the Green Lanes project. I don't know if you've had anyone from out there, but I know you had the executive director of Bikes Belong, mm-hmm. Tim Blumenthal, out. Right. Mm-hmm. They've got, you know, the Green Lanes project, which is helping cities get over the hurdles to adding basically separated buffered bike lanes on city streets. And we had a visit from Martha Rakowski, who's certainly a bicycling rock star. And if we could get on that sort of level, it's not just a static, we have some type of status, but it'd actually be our community being one of 8 other communities that is committed to achieving more.
Mm-hmm. And they call it the Green Lanes community, huh?
The Green Lanes Project.
Project.
Yeah.
And this whole business of separated, protected bike lanes. Well, Newport Beach, we've just started a bicycle master plan. And I keep thinking that, you know, there's a lot of work to do, sure. And you got to examine the whole city to put together a comprehensive plan. But we need separated bike lanes. We've got high-speed arterials going from one end of the city to the other. We need to put more emphasis on that. Santa Barbara, too, I can imagine.
Yeah. I mean, one way to look at it is industrial engineering is based on separating, you know, human beings from potentially dangerous machinery. You know, like if you have a belt drive on an engine, for example, you know, you don't stick your hands or fingers anywhere near the belt. Yeah. But it's not quite like that on roadways. You know, we have this whole vehicular cycling thing that we had to kind of get over a little bit before we remembered that the majority of the population that would like to bike would also like to feel safe.
Right.
And that's the
irony there is a lot of the people that are out there riding their bikes today, maybe many of them see themselves as vehicular cyclists and think that's great. There's this big untapped, I call it the invisible constituency out there. For you, it'll be getting from 6% to 10%, and for me, from 1% to 3%, right, is enticing people onto the roadways.
Yeah.
We need to separate that.
Well, there was this great slide in the presentation that Martha Murkowski gave that Portland developed, and it was Portland DOT had a sociological look at the potential market for bicyclists, right? And the 1% is the strong and fearless, right? These are the folks that even without vehicular cycling or, you know, basic bike skills, the bike messenger types, right? They're just going to ride and be confident. Then there's maybe 5% to 6%, which is pretty much the market that we have now, of people who are somewhat confident and they're willing to take risks, right? And those are, I would argue, kind of the vehicular cyclists.
Right.
And then you got 30% of the population that's just not going to bike, be it mobility issues or just kind of the way, you know, they live, if they're for whatever reason, right? But then 60% of the population is just waiting, but they're primarily interested in being comfortable and feeling safe.
Right.
And that's something that I think the vehicular cyclists kind of lose sight of is, yeah, people could bike in a multi-lane arterial and they could assert their right to a lane, but that is intimidating and people don't want, there's enough stress in life already.
Well, amen. Do you have kids, Ed?
I don't, but I've got some of my cousins here in town and we ride with kids.
Well, you know what I'm saying. I'm getting
Right? It's like, that's something
that's enough stress in my household.
But actually the kids on the road thing is a great, great kind of argument for the vehicular cyclists is, okay, you're confident with that. Would you take your kids on that road?
Exactly. That's what I throw at my friends sometimes when they're arguing. So we're talking about 60% of the folks out there would ride if we had the safe infrastructure. And that's what I mean by this invisible constituency. You can't see them today. All the elected officials in Newport Beach see today are the Pelotons, you know, zipping through town at 6:30 in the morning, right? That's the only constituency that's really very visible at all.
Yeah.
And their needs are much different. At 6:30 in the morning, these high-speed arterials just aren't that, they're not as dangerous as they are at 4 o'clock in the afternoon. That's for sure. Well, Ed, could we spend a moment, a little bit about your story? You went to UCSB. What did you study?
I went there to study film, and I took a class in environmental studies in urban ecology. And within like a week of that class, I changed my major and became an environmental studies student.
What was it that appealed to you so much?
We hear about and talk about environmental stuff so much. The fact that there were actually real solutions that you could implement in the community in which you live is something that I never really felt was a discussion that I heard. And that I could do that for work was pretty compelling.
Mm-hmm. I'm thinking like the street films folks. Have you been able to use some of your filmmaking talents, though, to advocate?
A little bit. We actually were producing a video specifically for an advocacy campaign we have so that we can actually interview pedestrians and bicyclists in this specific stretch of road and present that not just to the Goleta City Council, but also to the larger community. So yeah, I think the video is just becoming an amazing regular tool.
I've been on the team, done two videos here in Newport Beach. One of them, of course, two of them, one's going to have a bigger outcome than the other, but it works very well. All advocates should consider that, huh, Ed?
It's a great way to tell a story.
It sure is. Well, Ed, thank you so much for joining me on the show today. I'm delighted to meet you. I'm going to be in Santa Barbara in just about 3 or 4 weeks. I'm doing a multimodal bike trip up to San Luis Obispo, then working my way back to Santa Barbara for a couple of days. So I look forward to riding around the streets of Santa Barbara again.
Yeah, Frank, stop by our office and join me for a ride.
Okay, I'll do that, Ed. Well, thanks again for joining me on the show today, Ed.
Well, Frank, thank you.
All right, bye-bye. We're back in the studio. Thanks a lot, Ed, for taking the time to join me on the show. I'd like to invite you to come by the website, cdmcyclist.com, and you can leave a comment behind. I've got a PayPal donate button there that could use a little exercise. And explore other interviews, like Ed mentioned, some of those rock stars he's attributes I've been able to interview. They're all there in an easy, convenient place on the website. Well, that's it for today's show. Thanks for listening. Bye-bye.